It's that time of year again where I think we need to take a quick look at how the markets are faring and what's on the horizon. So I'm offering not one, but three short podcasts this week, each taking a view on what's driving the core shipping markets and where the opportunities and risks lie ahead. We're going to be covering containers and dry bulk, but I'm starting this mini outlook series here with tankers, where things are getting interesting. Geopolitical disruptions, war, sanctions, OPEC plus production cuts, even the weather have all added ton-mile demand at a point when fleet growth is at a record low. We are living through something of a golden age of tankers right now, and certainly nobody is expecting anything particularly untoward to hit the positive sentiment until at least end of 2026. Beyond that, though, things get more interesting, and what's happening now in terms of tanker orders flooding in is going to determine whether 2027 is a downward swing or a crash. Because while things are admittedly looking pretty rosy right now for the energy shipping markets, the risks are far from removed. If the fleet supply inefficiencies caused by the redirection of Russian oil exports away from Europe, primarily east of Suez, were to suddenly evaporate, purely hypothetically, of course, we would be looking at a very different picture right now. The wider market remains delicately poised, with positive and negative drivers, at the moment, so far, largely offsetting one another. But let's not forget OPEC. The cartel has installed production cuts since November 2022 to artificially buoy oil prices. Now, analysts estimate that OPEC Plus is sitting on about 6 million barrels a day of spare capacity that it could unleash to the global markets to lower prices if they spiked to triple digits in order to prevent demand destruction. Whether they will, when they will, that is the big question. But to help me make sense of all of this, I've drafted in this week Andrew Wilson, Head of Research and Consultancy Services at BRS Shipbrokers. And I started by asking him whether he agrees with the fact that amidst all of this disruption, the things really are looking pretty decent for the tanker owners right now.
Absolutely. And I would also say that the disruption has helped propel, maybe given the market a jump start. I would say, we've still got the extra ton miles coming out of Russia. We've got the rise of the grey fleet, which is, taken tonnage away from the mainstream. And we're at a situation now where probably without the rerouting around the Cape, certainly the clean products wouldn't be as strong as they are. So I think that, my big worry is that and I'm possibly slightly bearish, or I have been slightly bearish in the run-up to this, but my worry is that actually fundamentally where we've been hasn't been supportive, but going forward, everything does look incredibly supportive. Looking at the fleet's incredibly, it's getting tight. I think this month is going to be a month where we're not going to see any crude tanker deliveries, so which I can't remember the last time we saw that. So it's looking very, very, very tight. The big theme looking forward, though, is OPEC and the fact that, for me, that's where we need a demand side driver to really give let's say put the market on a footing that if for some strange reason a lot of the support, a lot of the issues with Russia, with the rerouting stop tomorrow, we would actually have some sort of fundamental, let's say, boost. And that's what we haven't necessarily had so far. But I mean, our view going forward is that OPEC very much holds the key to the market.
Okay, well, the general consensus seems to be that OPEC Plus should open its taps second half of the year. But we don't know what's going to happen. And the next major meeting isn't until June. You don't have a crystal ball, unfortunately, ready to go. But what's your base case term in terms of OPEC and what happens next?
Our base case is the base case is actually they produce more. But there are two ways that can happen. Either they can say, okay, we're just going to produce, let's say, another million barrels a day, which would suggest that we end up with a very, very balanced oil market in the second half of the year. I mean, that will be positive in itself. But then you end up with another case where they say, okay, we'll unwind all of that 2.2 million barrels a day, which they cut, which means we end up into a slightly oversupplied market in the second half, far more bullish. And it actually put you, you do end up with a third scenario, which is the one that's happened, you know, historically many times over the last 20 years, where actually the producer group or the cartel, or you ever want to say it, basically falls up there. They fall apart and start fighting like rats in a sack, which if that was to happen, then, you know, all bets are off. You could end up with up to probably another 4 million barrels a day on the market. I think it's sat on 6 million barrels a day of spare capacity at the moment. So in theory, it could, you know, they could all produce what they want to prove a point. We end up with a crazy 6 months. I mean, the last time we saw that was you know, just the beginning of 2020, which combined with COVID, and we had, you know, floating storage going nuts. But we could, without getting to, you know, without having a demand response, you know, a crater of demand, just the supply from itself would be enough to send the market, you know, we would get a very, very short term boost, followed by a longer term, I would say just fundamental strong demand. I mean, oil demand is strong, and OPEC has to respond to that at the moment. Otherwise, it loses market share.
Fundamental strong demand, sure. But some of the more bullish editorial commentaries I've seen are routinely mentioning phrases like a super cycle for tankers. Now, I'm pretty wary of such terms, but where do you sit on this? Are we in a super cycle?
Yeah, I wouldn't use the phrase a super cycle for tankers. The one which we've been using for a while is golden age. It looks 2020, second half 24, 25, 26 look very strong, because the orders are basically locked in, and it is what you can only describe as an anemic order book over that, or anemic delivery schedule over that period. But what we were seeing today, I mean, we've seen this year, we've seen incredibly strong ordering, and I would suggest that that's going to temper, certainly that will temper the idea of a super cycle by the time we get to 27. Rather, we're just going to have one of these rather nice upswings over the next couple of years, followed by a downswing, probably second half 2027 onward. Whether or not it's a crash or a downswing depends very much on what we see over the next 6 to 9 months on ordering. Whether or not we see these huge, you know, these very strong ordering from the last 3 or 4 months continue throughout the rest of this year.
The maritime industry is facing a pivotal challenge, decarbonising the existing fleet. To address this, Lloyd's Register has been evaluating what this means for shipping stakeholders. Lloyd's Register's Engine Retrofit Report provides a comprehensive overview of fleet and technology readiness to transition to alternative fuels, including methanol and ammonia. This report considers the primary regulatory drivers, shipyard retrofit capacity and capability, as well as the importance of human factors and training. You can download the report at www.lr.org/err.
Okay, well, we've heard the case for the golden age. We know things are looking okay right now, but let's offer some balance and let's talk about some of those downside risks. What do you think we should be looking out for? What are the risks in the markets and when?
Very good question. I mean, the big one is still a recession, a global recession. Whatever way you want to look at it, I would still suggest that the market is, or the global economy is delicately poised. There's a lot of, one of the things we've put in our recent monthly report is the fact there's a lot of positive and negative factors which are basically offsetting themselves at the moment. There's a lot of talk about interest rate cuts being postponed. So for us, looking at China doesn't seem to be having a hard landing at the moment, but never say never regarding the contagion from its property sector. So there's a lot of issues there. My big worry going forward is the developed economy has never really tackled a lot of the issues which came up in the Great Recession of 2009. So if for some reason they come back, yeah, then we can end up with a, let's say, another recession, maybe not an incredibly deep recession, but let's say a very sticky period with very low growth. And if we end up with oil demand growing at less than 1 million barrels per day, which over the medium term, which is not what we see at the, today, but if we see that, then well, we end up with issues again where we could end up with a slightly oversupplied tanker fleet. Not, I don't think that will happen at all in 24, 25, 26, but certainly 27 onwards. The other thing I was just going to say was, you know, although it would be a very, very good, let's say, event for humanity, but the end of the Ukraine war, and we could see, we don't necessarily see it, but we could see business as usual. We could suddenly see Europe importing vast amounts of Russian energy. My feeling is that will not happen, but I wouldn't rule it out. As soon as we start dealing with politics, then to a certain extent, logic goes out of the window. So, yeah, I think they're probably two of the big race ones.
Speaking of politics, of course, we still have the increasing ostracization of Russia and this bifurcation of trade, which has, of course, resulted in the dark fleet, the shadow fleet, the parallel fleet, however you're going to define it. These are, I would say, by and large, tankers that are not going to come back into mainstream trades anytime soon, regardless of how this plays out. But they are still having an impact on the market, clearly. Do you have any thoughts in terms of how you think this is going to play out?
Yeah, another very good question. I would actually just suggest that we could see some of these tankers move back into the market. Not some of the really old. I mean, when we look at the grey fleet, we break it down into four tiers. And the second tier of those are these third-party owned tankers, which are very, very shadowy, which are really only doing sanctioned business, which today is basically, you know, Iran and Venezuela. Those are the tankers that I don't think will come back. But some of the ones which are doing Russian business, and some of the operators, I believe, have designs on becoming mainstream players. I mean, today I think we're somewhere around 700 tankers in the grey fleet. That's for me, demand has to be satisfied using some of those tankers. You can't just expect 700 tankers to basically be scrapped. And although you can take out some which are, you know, NITC ships, let's assume Sovcom flot come back, you take out the Sovcom flot ones. Still, I think there will be some ships, you know, somewhere between 15, 20 years old, that their certification will have been kept up. They will be running with what we term, or will be owned today by what we term shadow fleet owners. But those, and only doing Russian trade, but those owners eventually could become a bit more mainstream, or they'll keep doing Russian trade. So I'm not sure that they'll, I think there might be an increase in acceptability, let's say, at the fringes of the shadow fleet. Certainly not the darkest of the dark, but let's say the lightest shade of grey.
Yes, well, it could be a pragmatic political response to the oil price cap conundrum, I guess. It's going to be interesting to see whether the regulators take that view, of course.
Yes.
What about asset prices? Because, I mean, it's not just tankers I'm talking about here. Across the board, we are seeing asset prices extremely high right now. There's some diverging opinions in terms of what's driving those prices. But given where we are in the market, what's your view, specifically when we're talking about tankers?
I think on tankers, a lot of it just stems from the fact that you can't get a tanker built before the second half of 27 at the moment. So if you want to, you know, as I said earlier, that if we're suggesting that this potential golden age of tankers could finish in 2026, or let's say slow in 2027, then actually you want to try to get your hands on that, you know, 24, 25, 26 period, which means you want to go and buy a tanker. You want to go and buy a secondhand tanker. So I think that's really one of the fuels. Plus also just the fact that look at new building prices today. They're also incredibly strong. You see it sort of dragging everything up. Our view, you know, diverging a little bit on the new building prices, that we don't see any drop off there at all. Yeah, we see, I wouldn't say even a plateauing at the moment. We've seen, if anything, we saw a bit of a plateauing at the end of last year, and we've seen them take off again today over the last couple of months. And speaking to my assets department yesterday, we're still seeing an awful lot of owners that are willing to invest in or buy tankers at today's extraordinarily high prices. So, you know, there's plenty of demand there. So why on earth would tanker price, you know, new building prices drop, which means that the asset prices, certainly for the younger, you know, the 5-10 year old, they should stay strong. And the 15 plus, again, it's the grey fleet. One of the, probably the movement we've seen over the last few, I'd say 6 to 9 months, is that since we saw the mainstream owners by and large shun lifting Russian oil, we've seen, although there seems to be plenty of tankers or shadow fleet tankers to carry crude, there aren't enough to carry Russian products. So I think there's still an awful lot of demand for those tankers, you know, 15-year-old LR2s, MR2s, for example. There's still plenty of demand for those to lift Russian product. So again, that's helping to keep the, let's say, the slightly older vintages, you know, give it support.
Okay. I mean, whether or not they could get a slot at the moment, that's largely an academic question, I guess. But there are still some owners, I would argue, that are hesitating at the top of the market. And that, I think, is due to a number of factors. But the decarbonisation trajectory and the availability of engines and good choices to be made, that is a big part of it, I would say. There's still a lot of decisions, probably for some, that they still want to hold off on.
I take your point to a certain amount, but I think that today, the vast majority of the orders we still see is for conventionally propelled ships, you know, eco ships, generally scrubber equipped if they're large. I think there's a consensus that even if you order a ship today, you're still going to get at least 15 to 20 years out of it, even with the decarbonisation targets. I mean, the IMO has been very clear in what those targets are. So I think that there's not as much, anywhere near as much uncertainty as there was 12 months ago. And I think that's one of the things which has certainly fed into the increase in orders we've seen over the last 12 months. But still, it's still only a relatively, I think, what are we, 20, 25% of new orders are dual fuel or something along those lines. So we're seeing them come in. You know, methanol has taken made huge grounds over the last, you know, not just in tankers, but in all sorts of ships over the last couple of years. And that's based on the fact that, well, even if you can't get your green methanol, you can still burn fossil-derived methanol. So I think that that's a pretty much almost a plug and play, if you will, because once the fuel is there, you'll do it. It'll be available to burn. LNG is still, we still see a lot of interest in that. Generally, there's the view that, well, eventually we'll get to synthetic gas, lower carbon gas, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one of the reasons. Ammonia, hydrogen, other alternatives, I still think they're lagging. You know, that's where we're not going to see. And that's where the proper real zero carbon ammonia, hydrogen, et cetera, that's where I think we'll see the next big steps from. But it may still take a couple of years. But I don't think it's really putting owners off ordering today. You know, they're still looking for the least risky path, which still remains your conventionally propelled vessel.
So they're not viewing these orders as potentially stranded assets. They're pretty confident that they're going to make the grade through their financial lifespan, yeah?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, today's owners have done the sums inside out. They know that, they've looked at the decarbonisation path and they still see, and it's still clear that those ships will not be regulated out of the market, providing their order. I would suggest anything within the next 5 years, up until probably at least 2030.
Okay, well, that is where we're going to leave the tanker outlook. But as I mentioned at the start, there are two more additions to these mini market outlooks for you to feast your ears on this week. For Dry Bulk, our markets editor Rob Wilmington talks to BIMCO's chief analyst Niels Rasmussen. And on Containers Detail, it's Sunita's chief analyst Peter Sand with our box editor James Baker. You can find those editions where you found this one or head directly to lloydslist.com. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.